Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 23 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's Big Deal,
Origins 2009.
We'll give you all the details about our trip to the Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
are you the traitor?
Well, are you?
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from, as usual, beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana. But just recently we were coming to you from beautiful...
Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, the home of the Origins Game Fair.
And the Ohio State Buckeyes.
And the Columbus Crew Major League Soccer team.
And not much else. Yeah. But we are back. We're coming down off the con high, and we've got a load of information to get you in the know, as the kids say.
And I've got... Today I feel like I've got kind of a con hangover.
Yeah? You look like it.
No drinking really happened during the con for me, but... I'm really feeling this today. Going to work today was rough.
Well, it always is after the con, but luckily we will have enough con information that will get you in the spirit, even if you couldn't attend Origins.
Yep. So this episode is going to deviate a little bit from our normal formula, if you will, and we are going to have our Game On Inbox segment. It's going to be very brief because we have so much big deal. The big deal is so big.
It is XL.
It's an XXL.
XXL,
which is what gamer small. Right?
Yeah, gamer small.
It is that size, and so we have so much content from Origin that we want to bring to you that we're going to kind of shorten that Game On Inbox segment. But we're real excited. We did a lot of great stuff around the Pulp Gamer Media Network, and hey, you know, let's just get right to it right now.
Absolutely.
So, as always, our podcast starts off with a Game On Inbox, which starts
now. The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
Welcome to the Game On Inbox, and for this edition of the Inbox, we're going to be calling it the Game On Instant Message.
Because there's not quite enough information to fill out an inbox, and we were out of state for a while, so...
That's right, so we had little access to the Game On Inbox, but we do want to bring you one relatively important piece of gaming news that just hot off the presses from today. Today, actually, as we're recording this, they announced the winner of the 2009 Spiel des Jahres, which I know that we have mentioned on the show quite a bit that we're not really into awards. We don't really care too much about gaming awards. But the Spiel des Jahres is a pretty important gaming award. And, I feel like my opinion of awards is maybe changing a little bit. I don't feel like because a game won an award that it means that you should go out and try it, you know, or that you shouldn't try an award because it... You shouldn't try a game because it didn't win an award. But I do understand what I've heard some other podcasters say, which is an award at least kind of highlights games that have been shown to have some qualities that are good. So
right, and they knocked it out of the park this year, I thought.
They did, and we've announced the... Well, I'm not sure if we announced the nominees on a previous podcast or not. But anyway, you can go and look them up. It's real easy. They're everywhere. But the winner of the 2009 Spiel des Jahres this year is Dominion.
Yay.
And you got to give a little hand clap to the jury there. They did a good job.
Well done.
It's a fantastic game from... and so congratulations to Donald X. Vaccarino and to Jay Tummelson and Rio Grande Games.
Mr. Jay Tummelson to you.
That's right. You know, it's kind of funny because they gave out the award in Berlin on Monday morning. And, you know, Origins finished the day before, and we saw Jay Tummelson at Origins.
And his massive gravitas.
Yeah, he has a bit of gravitas. He's a distinguished man. But then I read in the news feed there that the Spiel des Jahres is given out and that Jay was there in Berlin on Monday.
Wow.
So he had a busy weekend, I guess.
World traveler, Jay Tummelson.
Yeah, but I think this is a really great – it's almost kind of a landmark win for this kind of game. I think it was almost kind of an underdog to win because of the kind of game that it was. But hopefully this will allow more people to be exposed to the game because it usually see a big increase in sales from games that win this award. And you might see even more expansions. We're going to be talking a little bit later about the Dominion expansion that we had a chance to play at Origins. but a great game and definitely worth it. We'll also mention that the Origins Awards just came out this past weekend, and Dominion won the Best Card Game Award. Yep. So I think this one's going to start winning a lot more awards.
And one of the additional things that makes Dominion unique to me was when we were at Origins, you literally probably could not spit in a room without hitting about five copies of Dominion.
Yeah.
And this wasn't just in the boardroom or not even the open gaming areas. I mean, we walked all around and people would just be sitting and playing this game everywhere.
Everywhere.
Normal version, the expansion, the mix, just that's all you saw was Dominion everywhere.
Yeah, and Origins started on Wednesday. We showed up, Cody and I got there about Thursday afternoon, mm-hmm. and as we were just walking through to get to the boardroom area, I must have seen 10 copies of it sitting on tables, so that definitely one of the hottest items at Origins this year, coming soon to a game store near you, I think.
Definitely.
So, you know, that's it. There you go. There's that's what we got for the Game One Inbox.
Yeah, but we will reimburse you with an excellent big deal segment, supersized, if you will.
That's right. So let's get right to it.
The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. All right. Well, our big deal this episode is Origins 2009. And like we mentioned, we've got a lot for you. And a lot of the things we have are interviews with different game companies and game creators in the dealer's hall at Origins. That's actually the bulk of what you'll hear, but there's a lot of new and exciting things this year, and we saw a lot of the things that we definitely want to pick up.
This is a really exciting time, I think, for us. Cody and I had a really fun time because a year ago when we went to Origins for the first time, we were just going there to check it out because it's, you know, it's like about a 3-hour drive from Indianapolis for us to be able to get there. And we go to Gen Con every year, but we had heard good things about Origins. We went ahead and checked it out. And it was at the convention and afterwards that we talked about putting together this podcast. And so this year we went as podcasters and it was a very different feeling.
Yeah.
It was very, very cool. And so, you know, there's a lot of great stuff going on at Origins. And so we wanted to be able to provide you guys some cool content and some cool interviews. But I'll go ahead and tell you, going into that dealer hall for the first time with a recorder in hand, trying to do these interviews, I mean, I'm not a professional at this.
Yep.
So I was a little bit nervous, but I think that a lot of the stuff turned out really well.
Yeah.
And we got to talk to, like Cody said, a lot of great vendors. There's a lot of great games that are out right now or things that are coming up. And one thing that we really would like to highlight are some of the smaller game companies.
Definitely.
You know, I was really impressed by the people that were out there in the small booths that you could tell that they're probably working a different job. They probably got a day job somewhere and they've taken their idea or some piece of their imagination and they've put their resources behind it. And they just seem to have a lot more passion about what they're doing than someone from Fantasy Flight Games. You know, no offense,
hey,
Fantasy
we
Flight
love
Games.
You guys.
Love you guys.
Yeah.
But to see someone who's got just one game on the market and they've got a stack of them in their little tiny booth and they're doing all they can to try to sell you that game,
yeah.
I really have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, and that's something that I kind of got caught on. We stopped at a booth that I probably otherwise would have walked past, but we stopped and we talked to the guy working there and just looked at his games and kind of played a little bit of them, and they were great.
Yeah.
And it's just something I would have never probably have done if I were on my own and if I were just walking through. I just saw a small booth and dismissed it, and there were some really really hidden gems in there.
Yep. So, you know, with our tagline of the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer, I mean, we also kind of lump in, I guess, the small publisher in with the common gamer.
Yeah.
You know, these just seem to be, you know, men and women who they've got a great idea and they get a little bit of money, not a whole lot of money, and you know, and try to put their idea into.
We don't
a
only play Fantasy Flight Games.
No, we don't. We don't. And we got a great opportunity to play some demos of some smaller company games, and hopefully we'll maybe be bringing some reviews of those games in
be on the
upcoming
lookout.
Episodes. Yeah, be on the lookout for those. So we're going to start off by playing some interviews that we did. We talked to quite a few vendors, and so we're just going to kind of lump them all together, and there'll be one right after the other. And so have a listen to all the great stuff that was going on in the dealer hall at Origins 2009. Okay, well, we're here in the Origins dealer hall, right?
Nice. Exhibition hall.
Exhibition hall. I never
know
exactly what to call it. But
right.
We just walked in. It's looking real nice. Actually got carpet on the floor this year.
Oh, it smells like carpet. That's the new convention smell.
Yeah, yeah. But we got a lot of great booths. We're going to be kind of going around and talking to a lot of different designers and publishers of games. So hopefully we'll give you listeners a real good overview of the different games that are available here. There's lots of new games and lots of games up for awards. We actually just talked to some folks at Table Star Games about this game called Wealth of Nations. We might have an interview with them a little bit later on.
Absolutely. And we're right next to the Osprey Books booth, so if you want that book on the Russo-Japanese War, 1904-05, you're in luck.
I was actually looking for the Warriors at Little Bighorn 1876 book.
Oh, okay, of course.
So you can definitely pick that up, too.
Sure.
All right, we'll have more in just a minute. Well, we're here with Leah Osterhaus from Out of the Box Publishing, and if you've been listening to our show, you know we've done some reviews of some of the Out of the Box's great games. They're a great company for family games and party games, and Leah's going to tell us a little bit about what's coming up and what's available right now from Out of the Box.
I'm so excited to get to be on the show. I've heard about our games on the show, but never actually gotten to be on before, so this is really fun.
We're excited, too.
We've got lots of new games coming out this year. We're showing one at Origins for the first time called Word on the Street, and we literally shipped these from China to our hotel room this morning and brought them in. So you won't even find them on the store shelves right now. So that's really exciting. And it was definitely fun for me. I finally got to open the box and see the pieces and feel them, and that was very exciting. But Word on the Street is very much in the out-of-the-box genre. It's a party game. It's actually a team game. So the board is shaped like a street with a boulevard running right down the center.
So it's not just a clever name for
it's
the game.
It's not just a clever name for the game. And there are words involved, too.
Wow.
So we got the word and the street.
Very educational.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got two teams. One team sits on one side of the street. The other team sits on the other. Down the center of the street, there are tiles. And tiles have letters on them. There's 17 tiles, so of course not all the letters are represented, but most of them are. On your team's turn, you pick a card, and the card has a category on it, such as something that comes in a bottle. Then you come up with a word that fits that category, so maybe we would say wine. If we picked the word wine, we'd get to pull the W and the N over, close one lane closer to our side of the street. We wouldn't pull the I and the E because there aren't any I's and E's. There's no vowels on the board.
Okay.
The goal is to get eight letters off the board on your side, and you get one lane for each time you use a letter. Of course, the other team is going to try to pull those letters back to their side. So it's a bit of a tug of war over letters. But again, we have the educational mixed with the fun and the party, and the other team is welcome to distract you in any way that they want, so you have that fun conversational aspect of it, too.
What ages would that game be best for, would you say?
That one's 12 and up. We will be doing a junior version of that one in 2010.
Great, okay.
And then the other new game that we're showing for the first time today is Letter Roll. It comes with seven dice, and the dice are different difficulties, and difficulties, of course, based on the commonality of the letters. So we've got white dice, which have very common letters, blue dice, which are medium, and then orange dice, which are the most difficult. When you're playing the game, you choose four dice to play with, so you can make the game easier or more difficult depending on what kind of gamers you're playing with. If you're playing with kids, you can make it really easy. If you're playing with Boggle players, you can make it really difficult. And you choose those four dice, roll the dice, and you come up with four letters. The next person gets to remove one of those letters, so you're not actually playing with that one. Then you have three letters left. You have to try and make as many words as you can, or write down as many words as you can, that have at least those three letters in them. You can use as many other letters as you want. So if we had P, C, and E, you could actually write peace, and then you could write peace with a different spelling. You could put pie. You could do any words that had those three letters.
Percolate,
perfect.
You like that?
This was nice.
Okay.
Very, very nice. Love it.
I am a word nerd.
So, all right, so it would be perfect for you. Definitely it's a word gamers kind of game. So those are the two new ones that we're showing this year. And then we've got the Backseat Drawing, which you guys have talked about before, Ninja vs. Ninja, which you've talked about before. And we'll have a couple new games for Gen Con as well.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking with us. Well, we're here with Tom Lang from Buffalo Games. And Tom's going to tell us a little bit about some of the new games that they're showcasing here at Origins.
Okay. The first game I'm going to show you is Ruin. This is our first foray into the sort of light strategy game. The object is to move both your pawns around the outside of the board through an interchangeable pathway to the center of the Mayan ruin. On each turn, every player that rolls has the potential to select a card to change out from the board. In the process of doing that, they're going to change the pathway for themselves or any other players who are playing. So, for instance, if I were to change a card out, I could take the pathway out from under you, and that would send you back around the board to a previous icon of your color.
And there's this really cool, just for the listeners who are listening, there's a really cool sort of a plastic overlay that fits over the board here, so you can slide these cards in and out, but the pawns that are on the board will actually just stay right where they are. So that's really neat.
Yep. So you can hurt your opponents by sending them back on the board. You can also insert secret passageways into the board that will allow you to, provided there's another passageway somewhere else on the board, will allow you to move potentially all the way across the board in one roll simply by landing on that secret passageway.
Cool.
So again, the idea is to get both your pawns all the way around the board, up your color stairs, and to the top of the Mayan ruin.
Very cool. So, and is this available now, or is this a preview?
Nope,
here at the
con? It is available now. It is in specialty stores nationwide.
Okay.
So,
what else have you got going on?
The other game I'd like to show you guys is the T-shirt game. Another relatively new game for us. And the way this is played is, each round, there's going to be one judge. All the other players are going to hold three slogan cards in their hand.
Okay.
So the judge is going to play one T-shirt. So it's a little T-shirt card that we have here. And the image is a guy kind of in a suit, and he's sticking a finger up his nose.
Yeah, very attractive picture.
Very attractive. It's based on one of my coworkers.
Oh, okay.
And I have three slogan cards in my hand. So one of them says, I love lamp. The other says, hi, you smell like feet. And the third says, my hockey mom can beat up your soccer mom. So each player, with the exception of the judge, is going to have three slogans. They're going to pick from the slogans in their hand the one they think best matches the T-shirt. Now, best might mean funniest or most ironic or most appropriate or most inappropriate, whatever they think is going to get the judge to select their T-shirt slogan combo as the winning combination. So just as a for instance, we'll say that the winning card was Norman checking out the babes along
with
this guy with the finger up his nose.
That's very nice.
The player who submitted that slogan would then choose a hot or not card, and this is how points are awarded. So shirt value, 150 points, and all these cards come with little anecdotes about why you got the points you did. So mine, for instance, says, Mr. T pities this T-shirt tremendously, 150 points.
The one I've got here says, Takeru Tsunami Kobayashi wins hot dog eating contest wearing shirt. Mustard.
Right.
300 points.
And
very
so you play to 3,000. The point cards go as high as 1,500, which is when Oprah gives your card, your T-shirt out to her audience members. And the low card is a pie card. It's 3.14.
Okay.
So there's a great variance in how many points you're going to get.
They're all positive, though. There's no negative.
Okay. There's no negative. And that's what we've got new for you.
Awesome. Well, if our listeners want to hear more about your games, where's the best way they can find them? Do you have a website, perhaps?
Yeah, www.buffalogames.com.
Okay.
They can check out there. There's some interactive demos. There's a list of retailers, contact information, online catalog, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, great.
So,
well,
that would be great.
Thanks so much for talking with us today, Tom.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, we're here with Jennifer Norris from Table Star Games, and this year at Origins, they have the game Wealth of Nations, which is a, well, I tell you what, Jennifer, why don't you tell us a little bit about Wealth of Nations and maybe something special that's happened this year at Origins with Wealth of Nations.
Sure. This year, Wealth of Nations has been nominated for Origins Board Game of the Year, and we're pretty excited about that. All of our games have the nice shiny stickers indicating that, so that's free with your purchase.
Very nice silver shiny sticker, yes.
We have Wealth of Nations. This is second year. Last year did so well. Everybody was pretty popular with it. It has been voted by Scry as one of the gamers' games, and it's a good one. It's been in the top 500 on BoardGameGeek.com for well over 6 months now. And, we've modified some rules. We noticed that there were some tweaking that needed to be done. Some of the trade phases were a little bit long. What we did was we opened up version 2 rules, and we posted them on BoardGeek.com, BoardGameGeek.com, and we've allowed people to give us their 2 cents. Help us create some of these rules. Give us your 2 cents, and let's get this a game ready for everybody to play it. So it doesn't take a long time. It's not an epic game. It wasn't meant to be an epic long game. So let's see what you guys can contribute. One of the things that they wanted was a way to be a little bit more aggressive. So,
gamers like fighting.
You know, they just wanted a little bit more of a hostile takeover. Let's get their land. Let me claim more. Let's see what we can do with that.
You hear that, Eurogamers? Yeah.
So we came up with War Clouds.
Okay, and so
War
this Clouds is an expansion?
Yes, it's going to print in February, or I'm sorry, in the fall. We're printing in the fall. We expect it to be back in the States in the early 2010 and hope to have it released and in stores and conventions early next year, close to spring. This is going to allow you to build armies, take over nations, take over land, and take over industries of your neighbors. It's made to shorten up the game just a little bit, and we have the teaser box here. We put a lot of work into this. There's been a lot of collaboration, and again, this is something that Peter really wanted to have this open to the public to help with this. It's another one of those things where we're, as we're playtesting this, we're putting some of the ideas out there on BoardGameGeek.com, and we're allowing the people to help us do this. When you have a public collaboration of minds working on a game, how can you lose?
Great. Well, what else is going on with Table Star Games right now that you could tell us?
We are have a lot of people asking whether we're going to do some more Hero Card games, and the answer is yes. Eventually, we're going to do that. There were some adventures when Peter took over that weren't quite hitting the mark for a good round concept of a Hero Card system game.
Yeah, the Hero Card Tax Accountant game, that didn't really work out too well, did it?
No. And you know, this is kind of what we started with. The Hero Card started out with these games, this card combat resolution, and to find a good game to go with that is a little difficult. So finding ideas from anybody, let us know, Table Star Games, and we'll see what we can do. We'll get the ideas to the man with the money and the man with the company name, and we'll see what we can do.
Well, good. Well, that seems exciting to have so much desire for input from your fans.
It's we really hope that this is something that Peter's always wanted to do, and it's something that a lot of people want to do but just don't have the resources to do it. And this is our way to get everybody to contribute just a little bit.
Well, that's great. Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for talking with us, and
thanks.
Enjoy Origins, and good luck on the awards.
Thank you.
Well, we're here with Ray Wares, who's the president of Wells Expeditions, which is a relatively new company.
It is a brand new company that just started February.
Okay. And Ray's going to tell us a little bit about Arcane Legions.
Yep. Arcane Legions is a mass action miniatures game for the masses, right?
Uh-huh.
Unlike other miniature games that are out there, this is very, very affordable. It's $35, gets you 120 figures, gets you three armies, two people in a starter, two-player starter game, so you're up and running for $35.
Wow, right? Good deal.
The game system itself operates around a blank honeycomb base, okay? And the base accepts unit cards, which represent the armies, okay? The unit card has all the stats and special abilities on the card itself, so you don't have to go into a big rule book, go into Code of Seas, try to figure out what your unit will do. The other thing that's really key about our game is that, unlike other mass action miniatures game, when you set up your characters into a formation and you're in that formation for the entire game, in our game, you get a reorg as one of your orders, okay? So you're going to be changing your characters up around in the formation during the gameplay to represent different styles of strategies, right, and what you're actually doing out on board here. So if I'm running across an open field, right, I got the rifle on my shoulder, right, and I'm running.
Right.
There's no way I'm shooting anything, and I'm not defending anything.
Right.
Well, our game is going to represent that for you.
This whole thing, especially with the little dice, it looks like it would be really portable, a lot different from your kind of big box.
You know,
a little more portable than such.
It's plastic, so it's very portable.
More portable than big metal miniatures.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a mass action miniature game. The idea here is to get literally 300 characters on the board on each side.
Oh, okay.
Right, and go to town, right?
So you're talking 20 or 30 of these cards per side.
That's exactly it. Right?
Okay.
And still be done within a couple of hours.
Right. Nice.
Right? It seems like the resolution is pretty fast.
Yeah. And the whole idea here is to encourage battle, right? So the game itself, although we're encouraging the battle and getting you into the battle very, very quickly, it's a victory point game, okay? So it's scenario-based, if you will.
Okay.
And each time you play, each one of us is going to lay down a piece of control terrain. Now, you play up to 15 points, okay, victory points. When you occupy a piece of control terrain uncontested at the beginning of your turn, you will get three victory points, okay? If I eliminate a sortie base from the field, from the playing field, which is half the formation base, right? I will get one victory point. If I eliminate a formation base, I get 2 victory points, right? If I eliminate a base with a hero on it, right, that'll add an additional victory point.
Okay. Right? So there's special hero figures along with the normal troops.
That's right. So in your starters and your boosters, right? In your starters and in your army packs, you will get your figures on the sprues, right? Mm-hmm. They won't be painted, although all the shields and banners will be temple printed. Okay.
Okay.
So
I noticed that those shields already have some color on them. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. And what that does is gives the playing field a flash of color, so a splash of color, and it pulls me into the table, right? But the focal points on my key characters, that's where I'm really at. And those guys are all painted. Those come out of the booster packs. Right?
Okay.
So in your starter, you're going to get 120 figures for $35, right? You're going to have to, some assembly required, right? In the army packs, they're $15. You'll get 40 figures in the army pack for infantry, 15 of the cavalry, okay? And then in the boosters are $12. They come with 5 to 11 figures in there, already pre-painted, and you'll also get your unit cards.
Now, you know, our podcast is primarily about board games, and this when I look at this, it actually kind of reminds me of the game Memoir 44 Battle Lore because of the number of miniatures. So, I mean,
sure.
I know that for miniatures war gamers, this would probably be pretty attractive product. Yeah. Would you say this would be good for board gamers
it
as
is.
Well?
It is. So I would caution any board gamer, though, in that you're typically, as a board gamer, you open up the box, you lay out the components, and you go to town.
Right.
With Arcane Legions, although there's 120 figures in there, again, there is some assembly required. The first time you're going to do it, it's probably going to take you 3 hours to actually get all the figures assembled. But once they're assembled, you don't have to do anything with them. They're done, right?
Oh, great.
So the second experience is much faster, a much more enjoyable experience.
It looks like people could even paint them if they wanted to, if they really wanted to get into it.
Absolutely. And so although we made this for the casual hobby gamer, if you will, mm-hmm. right? The game itself will lend itself to any style of gamer. If a real miniature style gamer wanted to play this game and he was into the hobby end of it, all the detail is in the figures, right?
Yeah.
So they'll paint up very, very nicely.
And for those listening that might be miniature gamers, what size is this?
They're a true 25 millimeter.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's, I can see the detail in the miniatures.
That will be debated by some people as 172nd. But
okay. Yeah. We will not be debating that.
So.
All right. Well, we really do appreciate this. Now, if folks want to learn more about Arcane Legions, when is this coming out? For the website?
It'll be available September 30th. Okay.
Okay.
We will be at Gen Con. So please come out to visit us at Gen Con.
We'll be there.
We will be sending demo kits to the retailers in mid-July.
Okay.
So go and tell your retailer that you want to see the product, and hopefully we'll get the demo kits out to you.
All right, well, we're here at the Exile Games booth. They're the makers of one of my favorite role-playing games, Hollow Earth Expedition, and I converted John into it as well. He played in my long-running campaign.
I like it too.
And we have M. Session Tower here, and he's one of the developers, and he's going to tell us about the new book that's coming out. It's going to press in 2 weeks, I heard,
correct.
It's called Mysteries of the Hollow Earth. What's that book going to have in it?
This is our expansion. It's really going to focus on what goes on inside the Hollow Earth. So there's a lot about getting to play the brand new Beastmen, and a lot about playing native characters, as well as more on Atlantean artifacts and locations and the different kind of societies you might run in there. There's also an expanded bestiary, so you get even more dinosaurs and other crazy things. So it really focuses on the Hollow Earth, and it allows people to expand their game in that area. And it's a good supplement to go along with the Secrets of the Surface World, which focuses on what's going on the surface. So this really kind of completes what's going on both in and outside of our planet.
Okay. Now, for the whole Hollow Earth game in general, what kind of role-playing game would you say that's geared for? Is it for your rules-heavy role players? Is it just for fun? How would you describe it?
This is definitely streamlined in order to focus on the characters and focus on the story. It really rewards good role-playing through the style point system, so that when you play your motivation, or my personal favorite, you play your flaw. I think the flaws are what really define the character. The GM will award you for good role-playing. Or anytime you say anything interesting, I tend to give style points for any time anybody quotes a movie I like to, but that's entirely up to the GM. So it's really designed to make characters that are more like actual characters, the kind of characters you might find in an actual pulp thing. They're not perfect people. They have their flaws and their foibles, and that makes them more interesting. And because they can accumulate these style points and then cash them in for bonus dice or prevent wounds or boost talents, it allows even a character who's a little bit of a fish out of water in some situations to really shine when they need it or really take control in other situations. And so it's a really evening out process. So you don't always have to play the character with the biggest gun in order to have a place in the, yep. on the team.
Although that is fun.
It is absolutely fun. But the character with the biggest gun might be right in his element in shooting at the Tyrannosaurus, but he might be also a little bit fish out of water when it comes to the social aspect. So if you're the kind of player who wants that huge elephant rifle, and when it comes to the social side, you can be kind of blundering your way through, and you can be accumulating style, putting it away for when you do face the big bad guy. You know you've got a stack of style points in your corner, and it's going to be that edge that's going to carry you through.
Very good. And what pulp movies would you say Hollow Earth most has a similar feel to?
Actually quite a few. Although I would personally go more into the books.
Okay.
We drew a lot from Edgar Rice Burroughs, Arthur Conan Doyle, things like that. And I think it's the same books which inspire a lot of the movies, like Journey to the Center of the Earth. And I haven't seen Land of the Lost, but the original Land of the Lost shows has always been one of my favorites.
You don't want the Will Ferrell version?
I have not seen the Will Ferrell version, but I'm a big fan of the original show. I have the old show on DVD and other things like that. But pretty much anything with a pulp era. It's such a huge genre, it's kind of hard to narrow down sometimes. But we may not have too many rocket ships and ray guns, but even things like Flash Gordon and old serials and things like that. So we're really trying to capture the elements. But a big movie, I think, that influenced it is we got to give props to Indiana Jones. Because you can never go wrong with battling Nazis.
That's right.
and uncovering lost artifacts. And so we have a little bit of a hint of that in there as well.
Had it not been for Indiana Jones, would there have been Nazis in this game?
I think you'd have to ask Jeff about the original inspirations. But I don't know why he chose 1936. I think it's a darn good year to pick. There's so much going on there. It's kind of right in between the wars. Things are heating up. There's so much potential for technology, both real and imagined, at that point. Life was different from how it is now. It was exotic, but at the same time, it's so similar that it's very accessible to just about anybody. You don't have to feel like you have to do a lot of historical research. You can kind of just jump in.
Where can people go to find out more about the game?
ExileGames.com. We have a bunch of downloads. We have very active forums. People will jump right on there, and they love answering questions. Very welcoming to newcomers. And ExileGames.com is where it's all happening.
Okay. Also, Mysteries of Hollow Earth is going to be going to press here soon. And definitely check out Hollow Earth Expedition. Even if you're not a role player, it's definitely something that you can sink your teeth into. So thank you very much, Sachin, and we'll let you get back to killing Nazis.
All right. Thank you.
Well, we're here with Brenda Holskenacht from Geek Chic. And if you listeners remember from last year when we did our Gen Con episode, we talked a little bit about the Sultan gaming table, which is quite impressive.
I haven't sold my kidney yet.
No, but Geek Chic is here at Origins this year and has a lot of other great products. And so Brenda's going to tell us a little bit about Geek Chic and about the products that you guys have to offer.
All right, well, our newest product we have here is called the Emissary. It's a gaming table for fine dining and gaming. So basically, if your gaming room is your dining room table, this is the table for you. It actually, when it's completely closed up, you wouldn't know it wasn't a dining room table. Do you want me to
do a
demonstration?
Yeah, sure.
You have several leaves that go in the center of this table. There's actually five different sizes of this table, so you can get an emissary that will accommodate most spaces.
Now, the one we're looking at right now is what size is this one?
The one that we're looking at right now is actually the smallest we make. It has a 3-foot by 3-foot interior surface.
Okay.
When we talk about the sizes of most of our tables, we are talking about the interior dropped play surface in our tables. So, for example, when you put all the leaves in, you actually have 3-foot 7 by 3-foot 7 around the outside edges. And you wouldn't actually know it wasn't a dining room or that it wasn't a gaming table as well if you saw it with the leaves in. And then you come around the corner, and there's the little button underneath the table that you just push.
Okay.
And it lifts that front leaf up, which allows you to easily remove the leaves from the surface of the table.
Oh, wow.
So the leaves are completely removable. So you basically have like a 3-inch picture frame around the edge, and then a 3-foot by 3-foot dropped table on the inside surface, which is actually, the standard is 2 inches deep. But if you don't do some of the accessories around the outside edges that you can do, like you can get desk drawers or what we call the GM's drawer, which actually folds out and does a whole bunch of other cool things. If you don't get drawers in the table, you can actually drop that interior surface up to 4 inches. So if you're primarily a gamer who has figures that are taller than kind of the standard 2-inch surface, you can do that. We also have inside what's called the layer cake. And what that is it is a piece of plastic. It's actually a piece of acrylic. And what you do is you take a suction cup.
Oh, wow.
And you put the suction cup in the corner and you wiggle it just a little bit to break the seal. And then what you do is you lift essentially a sheet of plexiglass from the table, and you can slide your maps or your grids or anything that you want underneath that protective layer and make it effectively a wet-dry erase surface. So
now, this is really cool because just so listeners can understand, uh-huh. The suction cup here looks like something you would find in like some kind of a spy movie or something that you know could climb up yes. a wall with or something like that. So and so this is just like a plexiglass surface or plexiplastic?
Plexiplastic. It's acrylic, technically, okay. But plexiglass, a lot of people are familiar with the term, that's why.
Sure, okay, gotcha. So that's really good for keeping your maps from getting wrinkled or anything, I guess, right?
Exactly, it completely flattens them out, and then you can actually take a marker and you can mark the surface. Let me grab a marker.
Sure.
I'll use pink because I'm a girl. I'm supposed to use those colors, right?
Cody likes pink.
So, for example, you know,
red.
If there was damage right there, you could do that, or if you have just a grid on the table and you actually want to make your own, say, a dungeon crawl or something like that, and you decide, oh, there's a big room right there.
Oh, very, very
and
cool.
And you can walk around.
And one nice thing that I'm noticing is that when you put these leaves in the table,
uh-huh.
it does not look like a gaming table. It just basically looks like a dining room, any sort of dining room table you'd find in a normal furniture store. So.
Exactly, exactly. The whole purpose of this table was to make a dining room table that looked like a fine dining room table, not like something that you would pick up at basically a lesser furniture store that within 5 years, if you get a nick or a ding in it, you pierce the veneer and then all of a sudden it doesn't look so good.
Right, and this sounds like something that... You wouldn't necessarily. I mean, you could put it in your basement, but it's not really made.
Oh yeah,
for that.
You certainly
but,
could. You
told
put
me
it in
that
any
the
room.
You told me that yes. the motto for your company. What was it again?
Emerge ex hypogeo, which is Latin for "come out of the basement."
That's really good.
So if you get someone who technically knows Latin, they're like, "Hypogeo isn't a Latin word." It's like, well, they didn't have a word for basement. It's actually a Greek borrow word, but Latin and Greek were actually
See,
right around the same time.
If they do that, you tell them to get out of the basement.
Exactly. Yeah, not surprising that a bunch of gamers would argue over the Latin, but. Well, this is really cool. So where can our listeners find out more about your products if they aren't able to come to a convention and see them
Oh, certainly. If you go to geekchichq.com, so it's GeekChichq, as in headquarters.com. That is our website, and you can see a lot of our products there. We have several products that we've come out with for conventions that will probably be up within the next couple of weeks. We're sneak previewing a couple of things here at Origins.
Cool.
And we are, of course, a custom company, so whatever you want in the tables that we make, we can do. The heights are completely adjustable, what kind of wood you make it out of. We primarily work, for example, in walnut and maple and cherry.
Okay.
And these are all solid hardwoods because our whole purpose is, you know, let's make heirloom quality furniture. Let's actually make something nice that's going to basically be fought over by your grandchildren.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, Brenda. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome.
All right, well, we're here at the Guerrilla Games booth, and Jeff is going to show us how to play this game called Who Would Win.
It's a three-word title. It's not that hard.
All right, Cody, you are going to get the characters Siegfried and Roy. Siegfried and Roy are going to be up against John. You've got Al Capone.
I'm Al Capone.
Okay. And the event is Russian Roulette. You've got 20 seconds to tell us why Siegfried and Roy would win it. Russian Roulette, Cody, Joe.
Your gun is very impressive, and I can see that, but we've got a tiger, and there's two of us. A tiger. And we do magic, so we would take your gun away with our tiger. Tiger. Thank you.
All right, time.
You yield the balance of your time?
Thank you.
All right, John, you have got 20 seconds to explain why Al Capone would beat Siegfried and Roy in Russian Roulette.
Al Capone is a gangster, and that means he deals with guns all the time. I don't care about the tiger. He deals with guns all the time. He's fearless. He would be pulling the trigger five times, and he would win.
All right, you get a brief rebuttal, Cody.
Al Capone is dead. Siegfried and Roy are alive.
All right, and now the audience votes who would win. We're going with John.
Oh. Going with me.
Going with John.
Winner. I love this game. This is a great game. How do you like the game, Cody?
I still like it.
Okay.
Bye, three guys.
All right, so this is a who would win, and how many players is it for? Like more than two, probably, right?
Two to infinite. If you have more players, you can do a team game. You can have a single elimination instead of round robin. And the person who has the best argument gets to keep the card. First guy to get to five cards wins the game. Or the first team to get to five cards wins the game.
So our listeners wanted to find more about the game. What would they need to do?
www.gorillaboardgames.com.
All right. Thanks so much, Jeff, for your time.
Thanks for checking it out.
Al Capone, winner.
Yeah.
We have the privilege of being here with Jay Tummelson, who is from a particular game company that we have done several reviews and things on our show about his games from his company. But we always have a bit of a disagreement as to what the correct pronunciation.
I think I'm going to lose this one.
I think Cody's going to lose this one, but. Jay, if you would you please give us the proper pronunciation of the company that you're affiliated with?
Proper pronunciation. Would that be what I call it?
Oh, no. See, this is more complicated than I thought it would be.
I call it Rio Grande Games.
Dang it.
Rio Grande Games.
But officially, you would say?
Rio Grande Games.
Okay, fantastic.
Cody has lost this one. See?
Oh, well.
Now, if you ask me to tell you what a certain river in New Mexico and Texas is called, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Well, I won't answer that question.
All right.
Well, Jay, thanks very much for answering that important question. Our listeners have wanted to know. Thanks. So there it is, directly from Jay's mouth.
Now I don't think we can accept that as an official result.
What do you mean?
Because my pronunciation, Rio Grande, was not even an option in his book. He said between Rio Grande and Rio Grande.
Yeah, he said Rio Grande after we turned them. We had a little couple minute conversation after we turned off the recorder, and he kept saying Rio Grande.
Yeah, so I'm invalidating that result.
But he said that the name of his company was Rio Grande Games.
Well, he was tired. You know, he was getting ready to go to Berlin.
It was what, 11 o'clock in the morning when we were talking to him?
Hey, we saw him in the hotel elevator the next day, and you saw him in the morning. I mean, he looked pretty tired, so
I have no comment.
Rio Grande Games.
You mean you're gonna still continue with that pronunciation even after we got it on tape?
No, we didn't get it on tape. Rio Grande was not an option, so therefore I null that result.
You're unbelievable. All right. Well,
to be right.
So lots of great stuff in the dealer hall there, and we do appreciate Jay playing along with us and having fun with that one.
But he does have quite a gravitas about him. I heard he was destroying people at Dominion all day long.
Oh yeah,
just annihilating people.
I had someone actually say, you know, you should play the new Dominion expansion. We were in the boardroom, and I said, oh yeah, I bought it. You know, I've already played it. And he said, no, you haven't played it yet. You need to go play it. And he points to the corner, and I see Jay sitting over there, and I said, oh. he said something about getting beaten by 60 or 70 points.
It's unreal.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun.
But outside of Jay Tummelson, there was quite a lot going on that we enjoyed.
Yeah, a lot of great interviews. I enjoyed the interview with the Guerrilla Games guy, that game Who Would Win.
Oh, yeah, he was fun, and he kind of engaged us and kind of pulled us from the hallway there and was just like, hey, play this game, you know?
Yeah,
and,
that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was fun. Of course, I do like the Geek Chic interview.
Oh, yeah.
I love those gaming tables. And that Emissary table, it might be something we save up for. I don't know.
I don't think we mentioned it in the interview, but I think didn't that table start at, $1,300, $1,400?
Yeah, thereabouts. I mean, expensive, but...
Sure, but not like the $10,000 Sultan.
Right.
Yeah. So it seems
I think it's a better table. It's like the Sultan's got more stuff, but I think the Emissary would... be a little more practical.
Yeah, definitely. And they were really, I mean, I wish we had pictures on our show. It really beautiful, craftsmanship on those tables. Mm-hmm. So if you get a chance to get down to Gen Con, or you can check out the website, really neat stuff there. Lots of great stuff from those companies. And so we just want to talk a little bit about just sort of some of the stuff that we did in addition to getting interviews from the dealer hall. The dealer hall was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of other stuff going on. For me, the biggest thing and the thing that I'm probably the most interested in as a board gamer is the boardroom. I know we've talked about it before. If you listen to other podcasts, they kind of go on and on about it. Mm-hmm. But it really is a neat thing if you're a board gamer, because it's a huge gaming library from the Columbus Area Board Game Society. You're paying $16 for a ribbon, and then you can check the games out like a library card sort of a thing throughout the entire convention. So you can pick your old favorites. We played a lot of stuff that we'd played mm-hmm. before. You can also pick up new things and learn how to play those. And the best part about that atmosphere is that everybody is there to play.
So finding people for your game is
a snap.
It's an absolute snap. You hold the game box up and say, I need two for this game. You got two people within like, you know, a minute. So that made it a lot of fun. It also was neat to look around the boardroom and see podcasters, game designers, you know, publishers, people who are demoing their brand new game that they brought to show people. It was just a great atmosphere for board gaming in general. So I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, and as John mentioned, you know, the boardroom is neat. I'm not quite the avid board gamer that John is. I like board games. John, you could sit in there all day and play.
I could have really spent the entire con in there. Yeah. That would have driven you up a wall, wouldn't
it? Yeah, and I'm one of those where maybe I've got some ADD going on. I don't know, but I've got to get up, maybe do an RPG, maybe do the dealer's hall. I've got to kind of spread myself out. So I did some of that, and one thing I kind of got in on was, and we talked about this in an interview a little bit, was the Hollow Earth Expedition. We did a play test of it, of the new rules where they're kind of previewing a new adventure and even talking about new Sanity rules for it. So I guess if you want to take it more of a pulp horror or
kind of almost Cthulhu
Lovecraftian feel to it. And it was really nice because we got to play in a game and then directly talk with Jeff Combos and M. Session Tower, pretty much the two minds behind the game, and just really, you know, and he would ask us, you know, what worked and what didn't, and we'd tell him, and then he'd be like, what about this? And we'd go on, and it was this great, we had almost an hour discussion, just this dialogue of what we liked about the scenario, what we didn't, and it was a really neat moment because, you know, you kind of realize these people are just, you know, human, if that makes any sense,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's just... You know, they're working a product, and they're trying to make it as good as they can. And it was really neat being a part of that process. So I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, one of the best parts about convention atmospheres, I think, is that it is a great place for the publishers and the designers and the fans and the gamers to all get together and for them to seek out feedback on their games. And, you know, it's especially rewarding, I think, if you see a prototype version of a game and you give a suggestion, and then when the game finally comes out, you see, oh, this guy took my suggestion and actually applied it to his game.
Right.
So that's pretty neat. And by the way, M. Session Tower, one of the coolest names ever.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I mean, that's, you know.
I want to know what the M stands for. Mysterious Session Tower.
He won't tell you about that.
Probably like Mark or something.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I did while I was there, it was a real brief thing, I guess, is I participated in the Origins No Ship Math Trade, and that met at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Everybody got together to trade the games, and if you've never participated in a math trade, I'll just take a second to explain how that works, because it's really one of, I think, the neatest things that you can do if you have a lot of games that you, maybe you're done playing with and you're ready to, you know, try some new things out, and you don't mind getting some used games. And sometimes these math trades actually have brand new games in them too. But what will happen is someone will post on BoardGameGeek that they're doing a math trade of some kind. And then they'll open up a geek list. And so you can then go and add your games to the geek list, whatever you feel like trading. And this list of games accumulates over a few days. And then they cut it off and they close the submission process. And then they'll use this little piece of software called the Online Want List Generator, which was created by a gentleman on BoardGameGeek, where you can go in and pick out which games that are on this list are you willing to trade for your game. So you create this list where, you know, I have a copy of Shadows Over Camelot and I want to trade it for these three games. These are the three games that I'd be willing to trade for that one. And so you make all those lists together and you submit them. All the want lists from everybody get crunched into this trade program, and then it spits out these gigantic trades. They're like these big circular trades. So it's not just, you know, person A gives a game to person B. Person B gives a game to person A. It's person A gives a game to person B, who gives a game to person C, who gives a game to person D, who then gives a game to person A. So it creates these big loops. Anyway, that's all the technical details, I guess. But it's all done automatically, and the byproduct is that you will always trade for a game that you want. So you'll always get either one of the games that you have on your want list, or it won't trade at all. And so most math trades tend to be about a 30% trade rate. This one for Origins was about 38%, which was pretty high. And since it was a no ship math trade, it was free because you don't even have to pay shipping for the game. So we all met up at 2 o'clock on Saturday and traded our games. I ended up with a copy of Sheer Panic, a brand new copy of Acquire, Diplomacy, and also a brand new copy of Blue Moon, the card game. So, those are all mostly games that I haven't played, so it's really nice to get those. So if you have a chance and you're interested in doing some kind of a trade, if you go and look for math trades on BoardGameGeek, there's a running list of math trades that are going on. I think there's
I'm going to have to try it sometime.
Oh, yeah.
But math scares me, so.
Frightens you.
Okay, and on Friday, John and I also got to do something. We participated in the Meet the Podcasters podcasting panel, which I think maybe should have been renamed So You Want to Get Into Podcasting podcast panel, but it was fine nonetheless. And we had members from the Dice Tower, the Spiel, let's see if I remember them all, Myriad Games, mm-hmm. Pulp Gamer, Games the Thing.
And us.
Oh, yeah. I named them all.
Good job.
Yeah, and it was just Scott Nicholson from Board Games with Scott. He kind of set it all up, but he wasn't able to attend, so Tom Vassler from the Dice Tower moderated it. And it was just kind of an open forum on podcasting in general, and there was also listener questions. And you actually got the audio for this on Game On Bonus Episode number 1.
That's right, yeah. If you subscribe to the show, then you hopefully have seen that come down your feed there, that we've already published the podcasting panel. But I brought all my stuff to record, and that was a lot of fun just to kind of be able to do that. But I thought it was good information, and it was good just to be able to talk to the other podcasters who were involved in this. So that was a lot of fun
always
as well.
Always good to put faces with the names.
Indeed. And, you know, we've mentioned before that we're part of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. After the podcasting panel, we got to have lunch with the Pulp Gamer podcasters and talked a little bit with them. And that was really a lot of fun. Almost felt like business networking, which is a little bit strange for me since I don't do a whole lot of that in my job. And one event that I kind of fell into unexpectedly was a gigantic game of Memoir 44 Overlord, which I had never played before. I just happened to be strolling into the boardroom after dinner, I think, one night, and Tom Vassell was standing there saying, "Are you playing Memoir 44?" And I said, I don't know, am I? And what he was trying to do was get together a group of folks to take on the Dice Tower team. So it was four of the members of the Dice Tower team. I think it was Eric Summerer, Jim Reed, Jeff Engelstein, and Mark Zielinski, and the four of them were taking on all comers, and so I was one of the comers. And so me nice. and three other guys, we got together, and if you've never played Memoir 44 Overlord, it's basically a big team version of that game where you use a gigantic map, a whole bunch of figures, and every person who's sitting there gets control of one section of the board, and then you have a company commander that's actually handing you the cards and giving you the overall orders, and so they're overall in control of the unit there, or the company. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed playing it a great deal. I got to sit in the center and faced off with Jim Reed quite a bit there, but we had a lot of fun with that. It was a Tigers in the Snow.
That is what we are.
Germans versus Russians thing. We actually had to play to 13 medals, which is about 2 to 3 times more than a normal game of Memoir 44. And my team was victorious, 13-9.
Very good. High five.
Thank you. Thank you very much over the Dice Tower team. And so that meant that we got some prizes, actually. Yeah. The Dice Tower was able to get some prizes provided by Days of Wonder and FunAgain.com. And so I was able to pick up a few of those things, including a copy of the expansion.
It's something I'd like to try next year.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And if we can get more people together, since I have the expansion now, I can have that scenario. We can try to get some folks together to play it.
Nice.
A lot of fun.
And speaking of the boardroom, we did get to play quite a lot of games with the listeners or the common gamer. Not to say we are.
Either listeners or future listeners, hopefully.
Exactly. Yeah, we just got to play a lot of games with just fellow gamers like John and I. And two that stick out to me were we played a great game of Last Night on Earth.
Very good. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, it was down to the wire. I was the zombies and everyone else was the humans, I guess.
Yeah, was it hard to guess that Cody was the one playing the zombies?
What can I say? I like being the bad guy. But we played a great game, and it came down to the end, and I believe it was a zombie victory.
It was, but we only had we played a scenario where you have to kill 15 zombies in 15 turns, mm-hmm. and I think we only had 2 or 3
yeah,
left.
Yeah, it was. I thought I was going to run away with it, and then you guys went on a spree.
Yeah.
But that was a great game, and we also played our sentimental favorite Box of Golf.
That's right, yeah. Yep, that was good. And we had a listener, like I said, a possible future listener, I don't think you'd heard of our show before, but named Paul, who's mm-hmm. visiting us from the UK, who played with us, and we had a great time with that.
A lot of fun.
Trying to decipher the colors of the gems.
Yeah. And some of the other games, we actually brought out the recorder and did a little post-game interview, so we have some of them for you now. And
check it out.
All right, well, we just finished our first game here at Origins 2009 with something John just purchased, the Dominion Intrigue expansion.
And intriguing.
I see what you did there. Very nice. And we've made a new friend here. We have Mike, and Mike, you're from?
Columbus.
Columbus, right here.
Local, so right here in Columbus, yeah.
Makes it easy. So John's going to tell you a little bit about the game, because that's what he does.
Okay.
And I'm going to sit here and organize the cards.
Well, it's a really nice and interesting set for those of you who haven't played the original Dominion. You can definitely pick this version up and be able to play a full game with it. We did not bring our game on copy of Dominion to Origins with us. We just purchased this expansion, but it really almost is a separate game in and of itself, and you can just play it right out of the box. So that's what we did. It comes with all the treasure cards and victory cards and curse cards that the original game comes with, and I think the same amounts too.
Yep.
So, and in addition to that, you're going to get 25 brand new decks of action cards. And there's even some other cards that are sort of combination cards. They're action victory cards that not only will give you victory points at the end, but actually will do something while they're in your hand during the game. There's also treasure victory cards, the very fetching harem card.
We're big fans of the harem here.
Yeah. Where that'll give you two treasure during the game, but it'll give you two victory points at the end. So I know, Mike, you said you've played this game before, the original version of the game. This is your first time playing the Intrigue expansion?
Yeah, this is my first time playing Intrigue.
Maybe give your impressions on that. What did you think of it in comparison to the original game?
I'd say it's a good standalone game. I really want to see how it integrates with the other cards in the original set. But I was really kind of had apprehensions about using the cards that both had the treasure and had the effects and the...
The victory points. Yeah.
But they actually sped the game up, I thought. Just completely changed the mechanics. But I really enjoyed it.
Yep.
Yeah, we didn't have a single province card. That's a 6 victory point card. Not a one was bought. So
this is a tricky set of cards. This is what they call the victory dance set of cards that are the standard set, the arrangement that you can put together from the rules. And yeah, it's really difficult in this set to get 8 gold or 8 treasure in one hand. But one reason why Mike may have enjoyed the game is because he totally destroyed both of
absolutely.
Us. And he took advantage of this card called the Duke card, which will give you, it's a special kind of victory card that'll give you 1 victory point per duchy that you have. And I think he had 4 of those cards, and then five duchies.
That's
so
20 points right there.
That's 20
there,
points. He just completely obliterated us. So a lot of fun, and Mike, we really appreciate the opportunity to play with
absolutely.
You. And, Origins 2009 continues. Well, it's Friday here in the boardroom at Origins 2009.
Day 2 for us.
Day 2 for us, and we just had a great time playing Small World, and we got to play with a new friend, Joe. And Joe, where are you coming from? This year?
A city near Toronto, Ontario.
Oh.
Okay, so an international attendee.
His Blue Jays are destroying my Reds.
Oh.
I think as we speak, probably.
That's unfortunate. But we just had a chance to play Small World. We played a 3-player game on the tinier of the 2 boards, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, this is your first time playing this game?
Yep.
Okay. Well, what did you think of it?
It was easy with you explaining it to me.
Oh, but, good. That makes me feel good. Oh, thanks. That makes me feel good.
But yeah, it was a good game.
Yeah. And so one of the reasons why I particularly liked this game was that I won by about 25 points.
Get a hold of yourself.
Yeah.
Joe and I were just letting you win to feed your ego. I mean,
sure.
We were clearly the better players at the table.
So another great game of Small World. So what kind of stuff do you like to do when you're here at Origins?
Just painting classes.
Okay. So like miniatures painting?
Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And so I guess getting some boardroom time too as well, huh?
Yep. Just, not a lot of time for miniature painting. But yeah, boardroom's cool.
Yeah, cool.
Very good.
Well, we just finished up a game of Finca, which is one of the nominees for the Spiel des Jahres this year.
I didn't finish last.
Cody didn't finish last, and I actually got Cody to play a Euro game. It's a very exciting moment for me. But we're here with Helen and Hannah, who were kind enough to teach us how to play the game. They'd played it before here at Origins, right?
Yes.
Okay. And what did you think of this game? I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I like the little wooden fruit pieces.
Okay. Are you okay?
Helen's making a mess.
Helen, I think, has dropped all the fruit on the floor.
Now we can't eat it.
She's making a wooden fruit salad over there. So.
I really am. literally.
The game seems like it has a lot of different Euro game mechanics kind of thrown together into one. You've got this sort of rondel thing with the movement.
What?
Rondell, right?
Yeah,
Rondell. Rondell, that's the term for it.
Okay.
Okay, hey, you just go back into your Ameritrash show.
A little round
windmill.
Windmill. That you move on.
That's cool.
The donkey tokens are fun. We Cody named each of his donkeys, which was pretty cool.
Spartacus
and Biff.
I think Spartacus was the best one.
So this is one of the, like I said, one of the five games nominated for the Spiel des Jahres, and Helen and Hannah have actually played four out of the five games, and as of right now, I've now played all five. What's your impression of the four games you played? Which one did you like the best? Which one do you think is going to win the award? We find out in just 2 days.
I really like Dominion. I hope that it wins. I'm excited that it's made by Rio Grande in-house game, so I think that would just be really great if that could win the Spiel des Jahres.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know that it probably will win.
I think that's our favorite, too.
Dominion all the way.
Yeah, I think we like that one the best, too.
I'm a big fan. I mean, I really like Pandemic, too. We've played that a bunch. Both Dominion and Pandemic, of course, we played before the nominations.
Yeah.
And really like that game. But I thought Finca was nice. I liked it.
It's a good, solid
it's a good Euro game. Yeah.
What about you, Helen?
I've played four. It's been a long time since I played Pandemic, but I think of the four I've played, I actually like Finca the best.
Really?
Yeah. I like Dominion, but I haven't played it very much. I've played it twice. Oh. I played the expansion, I played the regular once a piece. So I don't have a real strong opinion about it, but I really like Finca. The first time I played it, I liked it. I really, wanted to play it again. So.
And you said you're someone who likes organization. So
I love organization.
So she was over here organizing all the fruits into very neat rows.
Yes, we had the neatest fruit stand in the room.
It was very nice.
It was very nice.
So anyway, thank you so much for teaching us the game.
Sure.
And you're having a good time here at Origins.
Thanks for destroying us.
All right, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right, and as always, it was really great to play games with the listeners and to just talk to them. We had a lot of people come up to us, and it was actually a pretty humbling experience for John and I. A lot of people just came up and say, "Hey, we listen to the show. We generally like what you're doing, and thanks for doing it." So that was really neat. And like I said, the best part of any gaming convention is just playing games with people that you've never played with before, making new friends, and that was a big deal for us.
Oh, yeah. So it was a big deal.
Oh, wow. I didn't even try that.
No, it was great, and we really, really appreciate all the listeners who came up and said hi to us, and it was, like you said, it was very humbling just to be involved in that. So I thought our bowling shirts turned out pretty good. The Game On bowling shirts, and so many thanks to Starwind Designs for helping us out to get those, and so overall, a great Origins. I had a really great time. Are we going back next year?
Absolutely. And even before then, we'll be doing in about 6 weeks. We'll have Gen Con Indy.
Oh, my goodness.
The big show. So
this part of the summer is always the most fun for me. But gaming.
I've already kind of got my strategy set for Origins 2010, so it should be a good one.
Oh, that's right. We had some discussions about that because some things we would do differently, some things we would do the same. And so I think you'll find us even more spread out and doing lots of different kinds of content for next year. So, unless one of us gets hit by a bus, we'll still be doing this podcast and we'll be able to bring you some more great content. So
absolutely. So now we're going to move into the Buy, Try, or Deny segment where we talk about one of the games from Looney Labs that debuted at Origins, and that's Are You the Traitor? What do you say we do it?
Stop.
Buy, Try, or Deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. All right, as we mentioned, one of the games that pretty much debuted at Origins was the newest offering from Looney Labs, and it's Are You the Traitor? Looney Labs also came up with the very popular con social game Are You the Werewolf? And so as kind of almost a counterpoint to it, maybe a little different version, they've come out with Are You the Traitor, which is the next in their more social line of games along the Werewolf line. And as always, John's...
As opposed to their antisocial line of games?
Your turn.
Welcome to Flux Solitaire.
Well, since John's being a smart elk, he's going to give you the rundown on the rules, John.
I wouldn't have it any other way. All right, well, Are You the Traitor is... I'll give you the story overview here.
Oh, please.
Of what exactly theme. Is going to do here. Yeah, it's themey. It's the moment of truth in your quest to destroy the evil magic key. The adventurers have encountered two wizards, an evil wizard who wants the key, and a good wizard who can destroy it.
Unfortunately, you can't tell them apart because the evil wizard has enchanted himself so that he looks exactly like the old, like the good wizard. So who do you give the key to? Choose.
It's a heartbeat.
That's good. It's good.
It's getting very intense, you see? I'm helping.
Okay. So who do you give the key to? Go ahead. Choose quickly before the evil wizard realizes who has it and grabs you. And be careful who you listen to. At least one of you, at least one of your trusted guards is secretly a traitor.
I kind of went to a horse there at the end. Don't ask.
Wow. Sound effects on.
I made the logo, all right? What else do you want me to do?
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
All right, so anyway, the idea here is just as we said here. There's two wizards, and then there's a key holder. And so the key holder is looking for the good wizard to give them the key.
Nice.
The evil wizard is looking for the key holder to try to get the key from them. The good wizard and the guards are looking for the traitor. And this is kind of the key part of the game. You got to know who you're looking for.
The key part?
Ha-ha. You got to know what you're looking for, okay? And so this is a very a kind of a social negotiation game. It has a lot of similarities to Are You the Werewolf? So this is basically a card game, and it's going to come with a deck of 56 cards. There's three kinds of cards in the game. There are four wizard alignment cards, 10 character cards, and 42 treasure cards. And so the way the game is set up is going to be really determined by the number of players. The game is for 4 to 10 players. And so depending on how many you have, you'll have a different number of key holders, traitors, guards, wizards, and things like that. So there's a whole chart in there that says how to deal out your cards. But everyone is going to be assigned a character card of some kind. And so you might be a wizard or a key holder or a traitor or a guard. And then if it turns out that you're a wizard, then you're going to immediately reveal yourself. And so the two wizards in the game will reveal themselves, and then they'll each be given a wizard card. One of those will say, you are evil. The other one will say, you are good. So at the beginning of the game, you're going to have the two wizards close their eyes.
Go to sleep, if you will.
Go to sleep, if you will. And then the key holder is going to reveal themselves. So everybody except for the wizards know who the key holder is. And then the key holder will unreveal themselves or whatever, put their hand down. And then the wizards are going to wake up. And then it's that time that the wizards are going to get their wizard cards to show whether they're good or evil. And it's at this point that the game begins. Everybody knows who they are, and then they should know who they're looking for. And this is kind of the key in the game, and this is maybe the part that takes a little bit of play to get the rhythm of, is who's looking for who. In a game of, like, Are You the Werewolf, which is another game from Looney Labs, it's pretty easy. You're looking for the werewolf.
Right.
So
you have a general anti-werewolf stance.
Right. In this game, it's a little more complicated because it depends on whether you're a part of the good team or the evil team. If you're a key holder, the good wizard, or a guard, then you're on the good team. If you are the evil wizard or the traitor, then you're on the evil team. And so you're going to start doing just talking and negotiating and just the sort of social interaction, which could be, you know, head nods or, you know, winked eyes or whatever. Whatever you're trying to do to broadcast who you are. Because, again, people don't know who they are except, and the wizards especially don't know who the key holders are. And so you need to keep in mind that if you are the evil wizard, you're looking for the key holder because you're trying to get that key away from them. If you're the key holder, you're looking for the good wizard so you can give them that key so that they can open the door of awesome or whatever it is. And then the good wizard and the guards are looking for the traitor. Now, the traitor is basically trying to keep from getting found out about. And so that's kind of where the name of the game comes from.
Are You the Traitor? Uh-huh. You know? See what you did there.
Yeah, yeah. So much in the same way as Are You the Werewolf, where you sort of have this sort of social meta game going on where you're trying to say, well, you know, that guy didn't, he blinked his eyes, so that must mean he's a werewolf. It's sort of the same thing here, you know. You know, that you're giving me a funny look, so I think you might be the traitor. You're not talking a whole lot, so I think you might be the traitor or the evil wizard or whatever. And so you're going to have this kind of a social interaction until someone is pretty sure that they've found who they're looking for. So maybe one of the guards is sure that they've found the traitor. And at that time, you're going to point to the traitor or point to whoever it is you're looking for, raise your hand and say, stop.
Hammer time.
Hammer time is optional.
Okay.
You're going to raise your hand and say, stop. And they even tell you have to raise your hand and point. So
werewolf style. If you're familiar with that, it's the same. It's the huacha, as I call it. The huacha! You know, you point at them and you put your other arm up. And
right. And that's also to differentiate if you're in the middle of a conversation, you say, oh, stop, stop, stop. You know, don't say that or whatever. You know, that's not the same.
Right.
You got to hold the hand up and point. Once you say stop, then everyone's going to reveal who they are. And, you know, the person will say, I think you're the traitor. So stop. And then you'll reveal, and you'll see if they're right. So whichever team is correct is then going to be able to draw a treasure card. And the treasure cards are worth a certain number of points, depending on what you get. It's like between 1 and 5 points. There's also a couple of special cards like magic rings that'll allow you to steal treasure from another player. And a gilded statue, which will allow you to pretty much stick someone with a bad piece of treasure if they try to steal something from you. So that's a whole round of Are You the Traitor? It can last. I mean, we played rounds that lasted 20 seconds, basically.
Yeah.
Just by someone giving a sideways look, you know, incurred a stop. But this game is meant to be played in multiple rounds, and the first individual person to get to 10 points is the winner. One thing that's different about this from Are You the Werewolf is that you get to play a different role each turn, each round. So, you know, if you're playing a big game of werewolf, if you're a townsperson, then you're a townsperson for the entire long, gigantic game of werewolf. And if you get killed, then you're, you know, got to go
on the sidelines,
go get
a
snack or something. Right. Yeah. In this game, it sort of keeps you in the game by having new things turned out each round. In a way, it makes it a little bit more complicated because you have to know the strategy of each of these characters. Mm-hmm. So you have to know if you're the evil wizard.
It gets pretty easy after a while, though.
Yeah, but it's a little, you would agree maybe that it's
a little
bit more complex than than Are You the Werewolf. So that's the whole game right there. I mean, it's just a light card game, a party game, very much about social interaction and things like that. That kind of metagame, I guess. Stuff of that nature.
Right.
So, Cody, what did you think of Are You the Traitor?
I was a little dubious going in because I just thought it was a retread of Werewolf. But like you said, it's pretty different. They tried to address the what some perceive as a flaw in Werewolf about the downtime. You know, if you're one of the first couple of people to go out and you're playing a big game of werewolf, you know, with, you know, 20 plus people, you're going to be waiting around a while, especially with all the deliberation that goes around in that game. And so they tried to make it where there wasn't a lot of downtime, and there was more of a scoring system where you're kind of rewarded for good play over several turns instead of just, you know, maybe one shot like werewolf, you know. It was interesting to say the least. It was a little better than I thought it would be. And if you think it's the same as werewolf, it definitely borrows a lot of things, but it's its own game too in a lot of ways.
One thing I didn't mention is that the more players you have, there'll be a different configuration of what the character roles are. So if you play a game of 8 or more players, you're actually going to play with 2 traitors, and there'll be a step where the traitors get to wake up and look at one another, and so that way when you get into the round, they can work together and to subvert subversion, whatever
to do whatever traitors do.
Yeah, just do their traitorous
deeds.
So I thought this game was pretty good. I think it's got a little bit of a learning curve for me. I had a hard time when I saw my role card and I sort of knew who I was looking for, but I didn't know how to go about doing it, and I didn't get any better at it as the rounds went on. So it might just be a flaw in my understanding of how the game works, but I see the positives to it about it being multiple rounds so that you don't have to the downtime element is a little bit different. But I put it along the same kind of on par with Are You the Werewolf, and that's not a game that I particularly enjoy a whole lot. I understand it's good for parties, but you know, so I can't give this one a real glowing review at this point. Well, I'll go ahead and just throw it back to you though, Cody. Are You the Traitor? Buy, try, or deny?
It's going to be a try for me, and I'm going to disagree with you. I think it's different enough from Werewolf. It's kind of in that same genre, but I think it's got enough points of difference where it definitely stands alone. I think though one of the things they tried to build in as a strength actually comes off as a weakness, and that's kind of eliminating the downtime of Werewolf. Yes, it's nice because you're not sitting around for an hour if you get eliminated, but since these rounds sometimes go so quick, sometimes you'll have just people yelling stop and not even really thinking through the round, you know, just kind of this rapid fire thing. And you seem like you'd lose it. You lose a lot of the debating and a lot of the paranoia and mob mentality that you'd get from werewolf. And I know this game's really not trying to go for that, but sometimes the rounds are just quick, and you're more likely to act on a hunch on this one than you are in Werewolf, just because, well, you get to pick up and try again the next round. So I like a lot of things about it. It's definitely something that I would play, but definitely give it a try to see if it's going to work with your group and your play situation. All right, well, that's what I think. We'll go to you, John. Are you the traitor? Buy, try, or deny?
I'm going to give this one a try minus.
Oh, no.
For me, sorry. You know, I think in the realm of party games of this nature, I think it's decent. You know, I think it holds its own. It's different enough from Werewolf.
And you can play with less people than Werewolf. That's another big
point.
That's
true. You don't need like 30 people to be able to play a good game of it. I think it's a game that I might enjoy more over time, just repetition. I do agree that if you get someone that is, you know, just kind of a loose cannon and see someone wink their eye, and all of a sudden it's, you know, the round lasts 15 seconds because they're saying, stop, you know, I don't know, that just doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun to me, but I think it's interesting. If, you know, it's a good price point. It's $15 retail. You know, the card quality is nice. You know, got to talk about the components a little bit there. So I think there are better party games out there, and I think I just don't particularly like this kind of game, but I would give it a try minus.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So to wrap it up, Are You the Traitor? I gave it a try, and John gave it a try minus in his own rating scale there.
Cody, are you the traitor?
Yes.
Oh, that was easy.
No.
Stop.
Where does your loyalty lie? To the human race or the land where you reside? And there's a time when silence is the same as to hide. And there's a time when a traitor's way is not taking a side.
So before we go, we want to mention a couple of things to you. One is our brand new website,
right,
which is up and running and definitely going now. And we'd encourage you to go and check it out. We've got our nice little video explaining the website to you. And so you get to see us being goofy. So please go to gameonpodcast.com and check that out.
Right. And if you want to reach us with any news, tips, tricks, or just general comments about the show, the best way to do it, and we haven't even mentioned that this show is the Game On Inbox.
That's right, at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And that is the best way to get in touch with us, and we encourage any emails. Even if you just want to say hi, we gladly welcome it.
If you want to tell us that you're the traitor.
Absolutely, because we are looking for you.
We are looking for you, yeah. Check us out at the Game On Inbox. We also want to tell you that we're available in iTunes, and we appreciate any iTunes reviews you want to throw our way. That really helps us out.
And as we mentioned earlier, Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. You can check out our shows and other great ones like it at pulpgamer.com, including Fear the Boot, my personal favorite.
pulpgamer.com.
I love you, Dad.
So one thing that we want to mention to you, a kind of a special scheduling change for Game On with Cody and John, is that we're actually going to take an additional week off between this episode and episode 24.
A one-time break to enjoy the summer, as it were.
That's right. I'm actually taking a vacation with my family, and so I'll be gone for a whole week. And so we want to make sure that we keep the content consistent for you, but we're going to be offset by a week. So the next episode will be released on July the 26th, which is the 3 weeks from when episode 23 drops. We'll come back with much more vim and vigor and hopefully lots of great stories of gaming, so we'd invite you to tune in.
Right, so until that fateful day,
game on!
Game on. Come on.
Single lap.
Single lap. He's got the magic in his hand. It's single lap. He's my kind of gamer, gamer man. Single lap. He's the man of the... Single lap.